Our first case for argument this morning is Berry v. Travelers Insurance. Mr. Walter, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am, and can you hear me okay?
No. Well, I think so. Judge Mannion?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Judge Kennedy?
Not very well.
Yeah, try to speak up if you could.
That's fine. I'll try to speak loudly here.
All right. I'd appreciate that, Mr. Walden. All right. You may proceed.
May it please the court, and I assume Mr. Dolan is there, counsel?
Mr. Dolan, yes. Is here.
Yes.
And you have a panel of three judges.
Correct. Yeah.
All right. And he, your opponent is in a suit. Are you in a suit?
I'm in a suit without my jacket on, and if I sound a little euphoric, I just found out I'm going to have a baby granddaughter.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Thank you.
So no matter what the day turns out in court, you've had a great day.
Well, you had a chance to make it a really great day.
I appreciate your perspective. All right, you may proceed, Mr. Walton.
All right, thank you. Our position in this case is that the traveler's obligation is not determined by a general understanding of the purpose of underinsurance, but by the specific language of their policy and Illinois case law. This policy specifically states that liability payments and workers' compensation payments reduce the policy limit. It does not say that it in any way is a set-off for the underinsurance that is that they're obligated to pay. I will say, in my experience, that's a very unusual set of facts. I can't recall another underinsurance policy that I've read where it doesn't specifically state that the workers' comp and/or liability payments are a set-off. But that's what this one says. And in addition to that, I think they're bound by a case law. And our position there is that the appellate court decision in Roberts versus Northland Insurance Company is directly on point and clearly states that if the liability payments go directly to pay, repay workers' comp, to pay attorney's fees and costs, they are not an offset to the underinsurance payments. When the Supreme Court took that case, it made decisions that only one underinsurance carrier can take the set off and that there's no set off for Social Security payments. But it did not in any way change the law about whether funds paid from liability directly to workers' comp are set off.
Well, Mr. Walters, in Roberts, it didn't exactly present the same scenario of possible double recovery for the plaintiff, did it?
Well, I think it's exactly the same. The $50,000 in that case, instead of going to the injured party, went directly to workers' comp, and the court said you don't deduct that $50,000 from what to do under the underinsurance. The language is the $50,000 was applied in part to attorney's fees, the remaining amount to his workers' compensation carrier pursuant to its statutory lien. Therefore, we find that the court did not err in denying a set-off of the $50,000 paid by Fortune, who's the insurance company in that case. The language cited by the defense in this case, where they claim a duplicate payment, uses the word receipt, just like Northland does. And the only way to interpret that language is consistent with Illinois law, is to say there's only a set-off if it's received by the insured. And in this case, just like in Northland, it wasn't received. So basically, we just don't think that the general purpose of underinsurance trumps what's specifically in this policy and what Illinois case law holds. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Dolan.
Good morning, Your Honors. Dennis Dolan for Travelers Indemnity Company of America. We obviously view the case from a little bit different perspective. I think it really is a straightforward issue. I think at the heart, it's how do you determine what the value of an underinsured motorist claim is. And by definition, underinsured motorist claim is the portion of the claim that there's not adequate insurance for. And so the first thing you need to do is you start with what's the value of the claim. And the value of the claim was determined by an arbitration panel below. They said the total value of Ms. Berry's claim was $310,000. That was the total value of her claim, the total amount that she was entitled to recover. Now we look at what was available from the liability carrier for the at-fault driver. It's $100,000. What's left? $210,000. $210,000 is the value of the underinsured claim, and that's the amount that Travelers paid. That's the way we view it. It's language about offsets. You don't even get to those issues or that language. The offset language applies when you're looking at claims where the value of the claim exceeds the limits that are available, total limits that are available under insured motorist coverage. That's not the case here. The total value of the limits was $1 million. Her total claim was $310,000. That comes within the limits. So we're not really looking at the offset language and the offset of the workers' comp. In fact, if Travelers was trying to offset workers' comp, they would have paid less than they actually paid. But that's not what was done here. Travelers determined that the value of this underinsured motorist claim was $210,000, and that's what was paid to Ms. Berry. So I don't think.
Did you participate in the arbitration?
No, Your Honor, I did not.
Because I'm mostly curious, but when in the arbitration, they come up with, I assume they take everything into consideration.
That's correct, Your Honor.
The injuries, the costs, and I don't know. Because in workers' comp, they of course do have their own provisions where they have they can come back against if it was insured for the same issues that they've paid for. I don't understand exactly how that blends in with the arbitration. Do they take into consideration the breakdown of what was workers' comp? You've got medical bills that are pretty much, we'll just say they're objective. They're what they are. And then I don't know if there are other personal injury, pain, and suffering. Will they have any of that in workers' comp or not?
Your Honor, in the arbitration ruling was attached with the as part of the record. And if you look at the ruling, I believe it's quoted in the briefs. They said all elements of damage that Ms. Berry is entitled to is $310,000, taking into account all elements of her claim, including the medicals that have been paid. So they set the total value of her claim at $310,000. There was argument
that included workers' compensation for $100,000, right?
That included, and I believe in the words of the arbitration panel, the total value of her claim is $310,000. That's what she's entitled to
recover. Which would include workers' comp.
Which would include everything. And we think that what the result has happened here is consistent with Illinois law. The Illinois Supreme Court on a number of occasions has announced what the purpose of the UIM coverage, the purpose of the UIM statute is, and the purpose is to put the injured driver in the same position they would have been in if the at-fault driver had carried adequate insurance or if they had carried the same limits that are contained in the UIM coverage. Here are the limits in the UIM coverage for $1 million. So if the were to treat this matter as if the liability carrier had carried or the at-fault driver had that limit, If the liability carrier had that limit of liability, it would have the same judgment, $310,000. That would have been fully covered by the at-fault driver's insurance. They would have paid that $310,000 award, and then Ms. Berry would have had to satisfy the comp lien out of that recovery. She would have gotten $210,000from that scenario, and that's exactly where she is today. So it's Travelers' position that the purpose of the UIM statute has been satisfied, as announced by the Illinois Supreme Court.
It's not exactly an even number. I guess the workers' comp was a little over $100,000, wasn't it?
The workers' comp payment, I believe the total work comp payments were $103,000 or a little more than $103,000.
Mm-hmm.
The comp claim was settled for the payment of $100,000. So that the $100,000 that was paid from the liability carry fully resolves the comp claim. So that's my understanding of what transpired.
That's why I was just looking at the, because they're, you know, it's an uneven number, but they rounded off, or is that what happened?
I'm not sure how they came to the value of what the total value of the lien was. It was some amount less than what the total payments had been, because the payments were $103,000. To be honest with you, Your Honor, I'm not sure why they accepted the $100,000 in full satisfaction of the lien. I assume there was some portion of that lien that was not recoverable, so that the amount that was recoverable on the lien was the $100,000 that they claimed. Again, I think that just highlights the fact that Travelers was not taking an offset here for the work comp benefits. If we had, the payment would have been less than the $210,000 that Travelers had made. It would only have been around $197,000 to take into account the additional $3,000 or so in comp benefits that were paid. Really, the Barry's whole case rests on this concept that she didn't receive that money, and I just don't think that that's a legally sustainable position. She received the benefit of that payment in any sense of the word. She received the benefit of that payment through the comp benefits that she received, the medicals that were paid on her behalf, and again, all that did was establish a lien that absolutely was recoverable and would have to be satisfied under any recovery that she made.
Well, basically, the arbitration award was $210,000, and that's what she got, right?
Well, the arbitration award was
$310,000,
right? And it's our position that she's received the full value of that arbitration award, the $100,000 payment from the liability carrier, and the $210,000 payment from Travelers. And as far as the Roberts decision, we don't believe that Roberts should be controlling here. Roberts involves much different factual scenario, different type of claim. In Roberts, you had a situation where the value of the claim far exceeded but the total amount of the UIM limits that were available, so that's why they had to get into setoffs and determine what the total value or the total limits that were available. That's when they start talking about the work comp setoff. The issue in Roberts is whether two separate UIM carriers were able to take the same setoff, and that's really what was at issue in Roberts. This issue about their receipt was not addressed by the Illinois Supreme Court when they reversed Roberts on the setoff issue. It appears that it was not appealed to them, so it wasn't before the Illinois Supreme Court, so they didn't have a chance to address that issue. But I would note that the Roberts decision has not been cited or followed favorably by any court since its issuance in 97. There's only two cases that actually cite that decision, one of them being the district court decision below, and another one, the Southern District of Indiana decision. Neither of those cases followed Roberts on that specific point, which Barry is attempting to use it for today. So with that, Your Honors, it's Traveler's position that Ms. Barry has been fully compensated. The purpose of the UIM statute has been met here, and she's not entitled to any additional payments from Travelers.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Dolan.
Thank you.
Mr. Walter?
Yeah, so just briefly, defense, the description of the arbitration is correct. That $310,000, the arbitrators did not consider any setoff. They made that very clear, and so that was to be done later. He also has stated that they're not pursuing a setoff for workers' comp, and that's because the language of the policy says that workers' comp payment is used to decrease the policy limit. That's exactly the same language and exactly the same portion of the insurance contract for the liability payments. So they've given up on one and not on the other. Again, it's simply our position that they can't amend the specific language of their policy by citing the general purpose of insurance. This is a policy they drafted that they sold, and they're obligated pursuant to the terms of that policy. we do believe that their interpretation is untenable because it would also give them the possibility, or they would definitely take a double reduction in a case where the underinsurance provided by the arbitrators was more than limits. Assume in this case that Ms. Berry was more severely injured and the arbitration said she gets $1.3 million. Under defendant's interpretation, they would reduce the million to 900,000 pursuant to the specific language that they can reduce the policy limit, and then they take off another 100,000 on the theory that the liability payments was a duplicate. And I don't know that they should be given two bites of the same apple, nor should they be allowed to amend their own language through this general discussion of what the purpose of underinsurance is. If they wanted it to be coincided with that, all they had to say was, we get to deduct workers' comp payments from underinsurance payments like every other underinsurance policy does. And the last issue I want to raise again is the Northland Appellate Court decision could not be more on point. That issue of whether you can set off liability payments that are paid directly to a workers' comp carrier was a specific issue in that case, and it was specifically answered. It was not addressed in the Supreme Court case. So it is still good law. And it's exactly on point with the facts in this case. Thank you very much.
All right. thank you, Mr. Waller. Thank you, Mr. Dolan. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will proceed to the second case of the day. United States versus Sewell.